Okay, so I put the current version of the draft here, and I put the recording here. I don't know if it's useful or not, and I have a new recorder, so I have no idea how well this one is going to work. So the last one I borrowed it, and that was good, but I'm not sure about this one. Okay, before I come back to the slides, I put together some new slides, and let's go over that today. So today I'm going to again continue with what I was doing in the last class and try to give you a bigger picture of the whole thing and discuss several different reasoning issues that involve action and change. Okay? So what kind of things I want to discuss? We'll discuss all these in much more detail as the class goes along. So I'm going to talk about all these various things in this phase, describing the domain, specifying observations, goals, and the reasoning parts come here, control verification, control generation, explaining something, abduction, diagnosis, hypothesis generation. So all these are various kinds of reasoning that involve action and change. Okay. So the first important thing is the description of the domain. And so what do I mean by description of the domain? So first is the action, as I said, right? So, and their effects. So let's take an example. Just action and their effects. So give me an example of an action. Okay, so go from say A to B. Okay? So how do I describe the effect of this action? What does this action do? If I do this action, what happens? So you will be at B? So in English, if I ask you what does this do, what happens if you go from A to B, what would you say? That, as you said, you'll say if you do this, then at the end you will be at B, right? So we'll say, okay, doing co A B, one will be at B, or whoever is the agent will be at B. Is that a correct? Is that enough? What about before you do go A to B? Right? And what happens? You are at A, so what happens after you at B? When you go to B? Go from A to B. So this is one part. So second part is saying that to do go A B, I must be at A. Right? And after you do go go from A to B, are you going to still be at A? Right? Why is that important? Is that important or is enough? Means everybody should understand that if I go to B, then I will not be at A anymore. So, suppose I'm going from A to B, and while in the state I go from A to B, I have my, say, I'm wearing a blue shirt. Okay? That's another property of the, I'm wearing a blue shirt. So when I'm at B, am I still wearing the blue shirt or not? Right? So, before I did this, so wearing blue shirt, and if I do go A to B, then I'm still wearing blue shirt, right? Now, if I'm at A and I'm going from A to B, am I still at A?
No.
No, right? So, I mean, I'm a machine. How do I distinguish between this and this? Because this is all you told me, right? Going from A to B, I should be at B, and that part is fine. And I can go to A to B if I must be at A. So how do I distinguish between these two, saying that, okay, if I am wearing a blue shirt, I'm still wearing a blue shirt, but if I'm at A, after I do this, I'm no longer at A. I mean, I can have my wife is at A. So my wife will still be at A, right, if I go from A to B. I mean, it's a good point, but that is not the key issue, because there can be other predicate about A which do not change. So you see the problem or issues is that I am in a state and I'm going to do this action, go from A to B. And I want to figure out what is this new state. Okay? Now when I do this action, certain things change, certain things don't. Right? So I could actually, if I am very careful, I can just say go from A to B. Doing go from A to B, one will be at B and not at A. That would be more precise, correct actually. Because I'm specifying exactly the change that happened. Okay. So when I say, we're going to go into details about these things. So when I say about specifications of the domain, so I want to be able to specify what are the actions, like go from A to B. I would like to be able to specify what kind of changes that, or how does that action impact the world? Okay? And the executability conditions, when can I execute it? So here, to do go from A to B, I must be at A, that's the executability condition. I cannot go from A to B if I'm not at A. Okay? I cannot execute all actions at all the time. And then there is actually the third one, the relationship between fluents. So if I'm smart, I won't write this. I'll just write that to make it easier that I can be at only one place at one time. So I can say at x imply and x not equal to y implies not at y. So this is a general common knowledge. If I use this together with this, I can derive that I'll no longer be at A. This is the property of the world. And there are many such properties. I could take this and compile it into my description, but then my description becomes longer. So this is what I mean by specifying domain, and I'm going to talk about it in more detail as we go along. And at this point there are these three parts, and the characterization of this, so the description is of this kind. Something along these lines, close to English. I would like to describe it close to English. And the meaning of that is a transition between states, and if I'm in this state and I do this action, then I will get to this state. Okay? So this thing describes this. And the reason I don't directly go here, do you remember why I don't directly represent using this? Why I need to describe this and not this way directly as a mapping from states to states? Because if there are n properties, then there can be 2 to the power n states. So there will be lots and lots of these kind of things, so I cannot make such a table. Otherwise, if there are a few states, I can do something like this. I can say, okay, state, action, and then state. I just make a table and say, okay, if I'm in S1, do action A, I'll be in this state. I can make a table like that. But if it is exponential in size, it's too big. So I need some way to do it, some better way to do it. Yes. Anything about
ontology?
Ontology means you can think of like action is an ontology. So ontology is a loaded word people use for various things. So all that we are talking about, you can think of is an ontology. we have to describe, because when actions have their effect, so act, be, act, those are properties of the world. And so we are going to, that will be part of the description. Because ontology has many meanings and many things. Ontology means basically the language. And this is all about language. Okay? Okay. So then comes observation. So observations are, the first bullet says there are various things about observations. I can observe that certain action occurred. I'm just looking and something happened. I can observe that. I can observe something to be true. I can observe that there is something on the ground. Okay? But when I observe, there is also a time component. Means I observe something now, I observe something 5 minutes later. And so those are the first things. Observations are about acts and occurrences, about values of fluence at particular time point. So this is, this term fluent is basically a property of the world, like at A or at B, the something is in the table. So anything a property of the world, is the term is used as fluent. That means it's fluid, it can change. So it's a technical term used in the literature of this field. So it often creeps up, so you better know the term fluent. Now, there are another dimension for observations. There are abducible observations and basic observations. And I think at this point, probably not worry about it, but I can explain you the difference is there are things, there are properties of the world, or some action occurs on its will, I have no control over it. So that's one kind of observation, and there is another kind of observation is that I can explain it. There's some explanation behind it, like something happening in this beyond my control, beyond some natural thing. That's a basic observation which I cannot control. But there are observations which I can say, if this is on the table, then somebody must have put it. So there is this distinction which will come into picture later, but at this point let's assume that there is one kind of observation. Now when you've given this, so now we go to next level. So this was our domain description, and this was the meaning of the domain description. Okay? So now when we go to observations, so we have two things, D and O. So what that means, or what that will give us, so we had that domain description D, okay? So now, say I will tell you that my observation, for example, that at time point one, I am at A. Or say John is at A. Okay? Another observation is at time point three, say, let's say John, we're talking about somebody else. John. John is at B. Okay, these are observations, and our D is the theory that I told you before. I'm not being precise yet, I'm just kind of giving you motivation. So D is all those knowledge about what happens when you can go from A to B, and when all that stuff that we had in the that I had before. So now, this given this D and O, what is the meaning? What can I conclude, and what is the meaning? Or what do I get out of this? Okay. So before, what I had is I had this, the D gave me this kind of a transition graph, right? Like that. Some graph it gave me. What O gives me is kind of a something superimposed on this. Basically, a meaning of this is that, okay, this is how things can change. You're in this state, you do this action, you can do this. you will get here. If you do this action, you will get here, and so on. So what this O does is basically kind of maps and says, okay, you're talking about John was at time point one. So if this is at A is true here, so maybe this is the where at time point one is. It kind of maps. So this is probably time point one because this has at A. Okay. Maybe this time point three maps to this one, or somewhere here. Say maps to, and we are not thinking about the time goes one step at a time. I mean, in one transition. So it could map here or here, doesn't matter. So this one, set 3, maps to this state at B. And in between the action, say, go from A to B happened. And so the meaning of D and O together is the red graph together with a segment saying how the world has progressed so far based on my observations. Where it started, where, and there can be multiple such things. If there is not precise information, there can be multiple. Because remember what we are trying to do. We are trying to think about how the world evolves, control the evolution. So this D and this O will give us the red thing and then the blue part saying, okay, this is what might have happened. That in time one I was here and at A was two. There might be other things. I don't know. And then go from A to B happen, and this is here. So this is what is referred to as a model. So this characterization of D and O together, this ignore B part, is a set of map trajectories where each map trajectory consists of a trajectory. A trajectory usually is a straight line, means a sequence of states and actions. A trajectory, how the world evolves. Repeat again. The observation is?
The observation is called here depend on six agents we are talking about.
Yeah, the agent's observation. Okay. Somebody's observation, agent's observation. Yes. Okay. So the so if you look at the third bullet, it says the characterization of D and O together is a set of map trajectories. Forget about the set, means because there might be multiple meanings. My observations might not be precise enough. So there could be multiple meanings. But in this case, I made it so that one meaning is very clear. It's a set of map trajectories where each map trajectory consists of a trajectory, a mapping of time points, including current time point, to states in the trajectory. Okay, these are states. So it maps these things to states. Okay. And map trajectories of D and O together are called models of this thing. So that's the term model. So this red and blue together is the model. Okay, ignore the last one between the difference between the OB and OA. So now we are here. So if you did this D and O, what you figure out that okay, this is how things can happen, but this is how it really happened. There's lots of things. I could have done this, I could have done that, but this is what I did. And this is where I am at. This is where the world is, and this is the current situation. Okay? So now goals. So goals are high-level specification of what one desires in terms of how the world will evolve. If I want the world to evolve in a particular way in the future, then I will tell the agent, this is what I want. And so this one is easier, is we plan to specify it using an appropriate temporal logic. So what we want to specify is that from here the world can go, I mean, infinite number of ways, and I want to somehow say that, okay, these are acceptable and the others are not. Somehow I want to say that. Now I cannot, of course, give this. Each of them is infinite. I cannot just list them. So I have to have a way of saying what exactly I want. So for example, if I want a robot, I want to say I want the robot to be go to room 234. That's easy. But I can say I want the robot to go to room 234 without hitting anyone. So then I'm putting constraints of how it goes to room 234. Okay? Or I can say I want the robot to keep going around the brickyard without hitting anyone. So that's infinite trajectory. But the property is that if in this trajectory it hits someone, then that's not acceptable. Okay, but if this trajectory doesn't hit anyone, it's fine. So the goal could be infinite, because I'm just saying keep going around. The robot's job is to just keep, it's a surveillance robot, it just has to go around. Okay? But without hitting anyone, so I'm putting constraints. So the goal specification is so what is a trajectory? I mean, the trajectory is a state, I mean, you can ignore the action for a moment, it's S1, S2, S3, infinite sequence of states. And this is another S1, S5, S7, so on. And there are many, many such trajectories. And I want to say these are acceptable and the rest are not. And how do I say that? And that is where temporal logic come into picture. I cannot say it by just listing them. In English, I can say it, right? So I have to have a nice way of saying it. I mean, the way I say in English, go around this room, go around this building, don't hit anyone while doing this. So I'm not giving all these states and anything, I'm just describing what I want. So my goal language would be something like that, close to English, which allows me to say what I want without giving all the details. So that's one we're going to study. So then, control specification is, I mean, the robot or the agent is running, so it's a program that is running. So what exactly the program looks like? Okay, what is the structure? What is the architecture? How exactly the program looks like? So in the simplest case, I can tell the robot say go from A to B. Okay, and I don't know. I can tell it to do something. Now this is okay if my goal or the robot's goal is to just go to room 234, just does this, gets there, no problem. But if I have, say I want to tell the robot go around the room, right, go around the building, keep doing it, so then I cannot say something like this. I would have to have some kind of a loop kind of construct. In the agent domain, because we have, so we do have loops, but inside the loop we have many interesting structures. So we can say keep doing this or repeat forever. You can have that. Okay. Now what do you repeat? Means it's an individual set of actions. And what happens here is if the agent is alone in the world or if there are other organisms or other beings there, other agents there. In other words, if the agent can completely predict the future, then I can just say, okay, do this, do action, keep doing this action, say go from A to B and B to C. Okay? And say go C to A. Keep doing this. So let's make a picture. So C to D and D to A. Say. And go D to A. So A, B, C, D, and A. Right? So now suppose what happens is, say this block here. I mean, say this road is blocked or this path is blocked. So what the agent needs to do, since it has to go around, is to go there, come back like this. Okay? So that is what is interesting about autonomous agents. You tell it what your goal is, and if it is really has intelligence, it will figure out. Okay, if it is blocked, then it will kind of go back. So you make a new plan. So if you want to do from scratch, then its goal is to look at the situation out there, and when it comes here, it finds out that from C it cannot go to D. Right? So it will go this way, not directly. So it will go back, right? like this. So how do I mean, so the structure of the control is going to be interesting. That should allow me that. If I just had this repeat forever and a sequence, I cannot do that. It should be adaptable. If things go wrong, I cannot have a static structure. That's what I'm trying to say. Somehow, somewhere here, I have to have some sensing and say, okay, look at, do, I mean, sense, and if you find this, then do this. So that's where the control specification or control structure comes into picture. And once you have the control architecture, then in that architecture, what is the specification? You have to write that. Okay. So now there is a general notion of a query, which will be useful in many of the reasoning aspects. And I kind of put a general terminology here. So the thing says G by means of C at time point T. So this G is our goal specification. This C is our control specification. And the time, T is the time point. And the intuition is that if at time point T I start executing the control specification, whatever it says, then this is what I'm going to achieve. So this is what is going to be true. Okay? So if this is the time point T and T maps to some state, and then I start doing C, and because of doing C, my trajectory is like this. These are the possible trajectories. See? Then these trajectories satisfy the goal G. Okay? And you'll see how this can be useful in this general structure would be useful in many of the reasoning tasks. So it's a kind of a query you can ask. And the, yes. T is the starting point where you do the control C, you start from there. So, see, states are exponentials and so on. So I don't, like if I tell you that I met this person or I'm telling you this room is true at this time, right? I don't say that this room is true when he was there, describe the whole state. Because describing the state is going to take a lot of time, means a lot of space. So I just kind of give a marker to describe that point. It can be a time point. It's like some, it's not exactly what your clock time, it's just some kind of a number or some identifier saying at this point I started this. And when you do the semantics, that is where these things get mapped into states. Because you cannot describe states every time you want to say something about. Okay. And what I'm saying there in the couple of the points there is if this G is about some property at the end of it, it could be something about the end of it. Like I, if something is true after doing something. The whole sequence, here the example says, if C is a simple sequence of actions A1 to AN, and I might want to say something like this, F by means of doing this act A1 to AN at time point T, then basically what I'm meaning is that at time point T, I'm going to do action A1 to AN, and at the end of it, F should be true. But if F is a temporal formula, then I might mean it at the all through this thing, it's true. So depending on how I write this thing, it could mean at the end of execution of the control, or it could mean that a property about the trajectory. Again, I mean, all these things I'm summarizing, we would cover it in most of the semester. I'm trying to put them together in one class to get you an idea of the various things we're going to learn, little more than what I told you last time. And also giving you the theoretical stuff behind it. This symbol here, temporal goal, this box F means always in the future. Okay? This box F means always in the future. So in temporal logic, the basic temporal logic has basically two main operators. You can use another one too. So this means eventually F will be true. There are many kinds of temporal logic. One is temporal logic of the future. And in the temporal logic of the future, this means eventually F will be true. This means always in the future F will be true. And this one you can say F1 is true until F2 is true. So this is the basic linear temporal logic. We will go there. In the next slide, we will see where we use the query. The query can be used for verifying a plan or exactly and for planning or any kind of things. It's just a construct. Because we are talking about description, so you have B, we have O, right? So we have goal Z, we have control C, and then there's the query Q, which is based on this. And then they are all interrelated, and I'm going to, when we put them together, then we will see the various kind of reasoning that we can do with it. T and the future, yeah, T and in the future. Okay, so now we get closer. So this is a mathematical term called entailment. Okay, it means if I write something like the T1 entails T2, it means from T1 I can conclude T2. Okay. You can use that as a meaning. Entailment is from this I can conclude using some logic, using a particular methodology, T2. So here there are two kind of entailments. We're using the same symbol. M is the model. And what is a model, if you remember? Model is this tree thing plus a segment in it. In this case, and a model entails a bunch of queries. Okay, Q1 to Qn. So it says M entails Q1 to Qn is true if Q1 to Qn evaluated true with respect to the model M. I haven't defined exactly how a query will be true with respect to a model M. I did say that if my query is of this form, right? And my model is, as I said, there's a tree, and then I have mapped this time to something. So a query is true with respect to this model if I look at the control, all the trajectories, and this goal is true in all those trajectories. I'll be defining all this precisely. These all need very precise definitions. But this is at the high level that I can say when something from a model, I can conclude some query. So I can give you an example. Say if I have the initial, have this one, right? At A, go A, B, at B, right? So So from this I can say that at B by means of nothing, empty, at say 3. If I don't do anything, I'll have at B 2. So this is a property, this query is entailed by this model. If I put at A, then it is not entailed by this model, because I am not at A. So again, from the description, so we have description, because we cannot create those models, I mean we cannot write those models in detail, they will be exponential space, and actually could be very huge. So we describe it using what we know about the axons, what we observed, and that's how we do to human beings. We cannot remember, okay, these are the things I can do, this is what I observed, right, this is my goal, go around, or this is my goal, and then I say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. So all these mathematically boils down to a tree of possibilities. Like if you're in this state, you do this axon, you get to this state, and then in that tree of possibilities there is a segment which says how the world has progressed and where I am now, and that's the model M, and then I can ask questions about it, various questions, and that is what is entailment. Now the entailment of D and O together basically says D O entails Q1 to Qn if each of the Qs evaluate to true with respect to all the models of D and O. What do you mean all the models? So if you have given this information about the description and observation, sometimes, or most of the time, there might be more than one model. The knowledge is not precise to tell you how exactly the world proceeded. Okay, the tree and how exactly the world proceeded, it's not, you don't know have enough information. So you have multiple models, multiple possibilities. But even if you have multiple possibilities, if all those possibilities tell you something, then you can make that conclusion that this must be true. No matter what happened, this must be true. The enough, yeah, the information in OB is not complete to give you precise meaning.
The third fact here means F1 is true if F2 is true, right?
No, F1 until F2 is true.
So
we'll do all that, so I don't want to confuse you. So this is here, so you are progressing, so somewhere F2 becomes true. So F1 has to be true until up to this point. After that it can still be true, but until that point it has to be true. So now we get into some reasoning aspect. So this is the simplest one. We say that now that we define what this entailment means, so if somebody gives us a goal and a control, we can just verify if indeed this goal will be achieved by this control at this time point. Okay, we just ask this question with respect to this domain and this observation. Is this true? If it is true, then this control is correct. So the reason I introduced this notation is to be able to say that control verification can be written mathematically very in a small sentence. That this domain description D and observations O entails, or from that we can conclude that G will be true by means of this control C if I do that at time point Tn. Now what would be planning? Yes. No, it's not being taken at time t of n. It's kind of all over the place. Time tn is probably here, and it's all the observations that I have at different times before, possibly. If what? No, not a timestamp. It's a, in the trajectory, because it's a temporal formula. I mean, in specific cases it can be a certain time point, but in general it is a temporal formula. could be said, yeah, it's the general thing. So, for people who know planning, so what is planning? Is to find a plan, right? So how would I express planning in this notation? Huh? Find C. Okay? You can say, given a goal G and you have a D and O, find a C such that this is true. This one is find C. So this is where actually this O, B and O, A come into picture a little more. Is that, so these are the basic ones and these are the abducible ones. So given this D and O, and abducible observations. Abducible observations means observations that can be explained by other things. An explanation model is, so what you're doing is you're finding the model of this, and only those models from where you can conclude these abducible observations, those are the explanations. Those are the ones which explain this OA. So in other words, OAs are things that can be explained. And so using D or B, you are trying to find the models and you pick only those ones which can explain this OA. And then more interesting thing happens. If no such explanation exists. Okay? And this is where things are very, very interesting. I mean, a lot of new interesting things come in to picture. So let me, I actually didn't make slides because it was getting complicated, but I think I can explain it a little better, just words. So let's think of like diagnosis. Okay, diagnosing something wrong. So one formulation of diagnosis is that I try to explain something. And so, okay, so let's put it another way. Say, you have your house, okay, and you observe something, and you try to explain it, okay. So when you're trying to observe and explain, there are certain assumptions you are making about that, okay, this thing is okay, this bulb is working, this switch is working, and so on. So your assumptions about certain things being normal and certain that most of the things are normal. Because you haven't checked everything. You don't check everything. All the time. So you have assumptions that things are normal, and then you make some observations and you try to explain it. And if you can explain it, then fine. So now, you find that based on your assumption that everything is normal, you cannot explain something. Okay? So then you say, okay, maybe some things that I assume to be normal are not really normal. Maybe this switch is broken or this light is fused. And that's when you get into diagnosis. So the diagnosis is a finding a minimal set of abnormal things which explain your observation, which could not have been explained if you assumed everything to be normal. If you assumed everything to be normal, you couldn't explain it. So now, assuming that everything is normal doesn't explain it, so you say, okay, maybe I'll start thinking that this might be not right, this might not be right. And each of them is a possible diagnosis which you can check, if they explain it. So this was a theory which is used, it's called model-based diagnosis. This is again another field, but can be nicely captured in this domain, is that diagnosis gets into that explanations I mean, when you don't have explanation, assuming everything is normal, then you try to explain, you try to retract your assumption that things are normal, and you start saying, okay, maybe some things are not normal. And you try to figure out which assumptions about abnormality will actually explain what you observe. And that will lead to diagnosis. And it gets more complicated because when you this abnormal normal, some of that you can sense, some of that you cannot sense. And yes. Yes. No, no, it says OB prime, right? Yeah, that's it. Yeah. But yeah, I'm making this slide, so there will be typos. I mean, I make it to the last moment, so there might be typos, so it's okay. I mean, but I went only up to explanation, so I didn't go up to, so what I was explaining is beyond the slide, is that once you get an explanation, there are more interesting things that can happen. It is about explanation. And then, I mean, the diagnosis is one, which I don't know if we'll have time to study, get there or not. We'll try. But then another one is when you really are not 100% sure about your theory itself, your domain description itself. Okay? So then you are actually getting into the territory of hypothesizing, like, okay, this is my current knowledge description. This is what I observed. I cannot explain it. If you are in the OB prime territory, it's more explanations and diagnosis. But if you are going to change the D part, not just observation, you're going to change your theory itself or add some things which are missing there, then you are in the domain of making hypothesis. And that's actually a good example of this is what happens in the biology domain. That's what I was introduce you to the biology domain. So in biology domain, when you observe something about yourself, right, you have some knowledge, and if you come to my room, you'll see the D part of what is known. I have the whole network of what things happen inside the cell. Okay? Now, when you observe something, you try to explain based on that. Now, when you cannot explain it, then you suspect that there's something that you don't know. And then you try to figure out, okay, what can I add to this, which will explain this? Okay, assuming whatever I have is correct. There's something missing I haven't put there. And, I mean, that's how human beings will do. Like, this is what I know, and this is what I saw, and I cannot explain it. So there's something else I don't know, right? You try to figure out what I don't know. And if you kind of guess, oh, this is, might be the case, and this is where you make hypothesis, this is how scientists work. Starting from Newton to anyone, you observe whatever the theory was, he observed why does the apple fall to the ground. So there's some knowledge missing in the mankind at that point. So you want to hypothesize, okay, this might be true. And then you go and do experiments to verify it. There's some knowledge you did not have. There might be some other accidents happened, or some other, your description of the effect of the accident, like when I did the first example where you did not specify that going from A to B, you will no longer be at A. So maybe something you didn't specify, forgot to specify, or did not know about. There's some extra things that you did not know. O is just something you observed. Yeah, new mechanism, right. So then you're dealing with the D part.
Yes. When I see about that, as I understand, for example, if we cannot explain something because we cannot find the path from the very huge space, and when we add some hypothesis, explanation, mean that we try to narrow the space, is right?
We're changing the, when you add something to the D, the whole meaning changes, the graph changes.
That the graph will be the subgraph of the...
Not necessarily subgraph.
It must be subgraph.
No, not necessarily. Depends on what you can add. So if I add, like if you missed about this go from A to B causes not at A. So if you did not add this, then it will be a totally different graph. It's not a subgraph, it's a totally different graph. There's a question of what is the structure of D and what exactly is in D. Means we are still doing at a very high level. I have not given you the language. So it depends on how you exactly what is in D, whether it is monotonic or non-monotonic in that. Whether it preserves, it's just a subgraph, or whether it's a completely new graph, it depends on the structure of D. We are thinking of adding because we are assuming that whatever is added, I put in D is correct. Because of course we can then go back, means you can go another level and say things can be wrong, and then you are in really different territory because you have to figure out what you have to remove and what you have to add, and you can do that too. I mean, some knowledges can be wrong, but it's a good design of a knowledge representation or a specification language is that something which you don't have to go, I mean, whatever you wrote is correct and you don't have to go back and change it. You can only add things to make whatever changes you want to make. That's a good design. Okay, I didn't finish this thing, right? Explain. So now I can go back to this slide. So coming back to agents, I glossed over quickly last time on this slide. So the agents, designing agents, the summary was that first step we want to write down what axioms are there, describe the environment, that means what are the properties of the world, and how the axioms affect the world, the effect we talked about today. And then we have to tell the agent our directive. We don't want the agent to figure out on its own. We want to tell it, okay, in a high level. And there's a architecture or execution language. Now, given 1 and 2, if we come up with 3, that's a really smart agent. It can basically make its own plan. Oftentimes it's too hard to come up with 3, and that's why we're going to study NP completeness, to discuss when it is hard to come up with. Even simple plans are hard to come by, to make. And that is the reason we want to study a little bit, is you have to have an idea of how difficult things are. And that's the reason this difficulty is why, we cannot create a completely artificially intelligent agent or something. I mean, people have been working and there have been movies and so on, but it's just the time. It's just the space to search through, and the time is just not possible. So the easier way out, is given 1, 2, and 3, that you're given the program, you verify, at least it's correct with respect that if you do this 3, then you can indeed achieve the goal. And that's why we had this query language. I mean, that's how we express the verification. And you can go a little further. You say, okay, I have given you 1, 2, and 3, and there's some slight change in the goal. Can you change the control a little bit so that it can achieve the new goal? So that would be interesting. So these are the various kind of questions, or this is how you can, in a high level, you can describe how to design an agent. It's a very systematic step that you got to do 1 and 2. And either you got to do 1 and 2 and decide on an architecture for 3, then you either come up with the program for 3 or the control for the based on that architecture, or you as a human being writes it, and then you verify. In general, most of the research, I mean, if you look at many of the robots, people write the three part. There is a very small portion where they leave it to do plan on its own. They try to write as much as possible, like in NASA, say. NASA is one of the main examples where they have to send autonomous things out in the space because there's a time lag. They cannot control it completely. Otherwise, you just control, the human will control. So some things you cannot control directly, so there has to be something done. So you try to do as much, I mean, what they do is they would sit down, they'd make the three, they would write down their control program and rigorously verify that everything is correct. They have to verify. And after they have done that, I mean, then they will send. No, no, there's a time lag. It takes time to go from here to, yeah, there's a time lag. Okay. And there's other issues also. I mean, things go wrong. So then, so in NASA what they do is they would actually anticipate faults and then figure out what to do with those faults beforehand. Like they have anticipated one up to two faults. They have made the whole thing and everything is programmed. When it goes to three faults, and that's where we get to the diagnosis and correction. I mean, next to diagnosis is repair. I mean, once you diagnose something is wrong, you have to repair it. And it's a different. And the NASA, they always anticipate up to two faults, and how to repair them is all programmed. When it gets to three faults, then they have to do directly. I mean, the people are sitting around and doing, and hopefully you need a computer to help you out there. So let's take a particular example where we can see exactly this notion of agents, what are the actions and what are the goal and the correctness, all these aspects with respect to this example. Okay, with the database example. So here, the database has three tables: purchase, payment, and account. Okay. So everyone is familiar with databases. And in the purchase, there is an ID, there is a client, and then amount, how much the client purchased. And then the payment, the client pays, and ID, and then client, and how much amount. And then account has a client, and then there's a credit and the status. Okay? And the environmental action is somebody can pay, I mean, somebody can purchase something or somebody can pay something. Okay? So those are environmental in the sense because this is outside people are paying or buying something. Now agent's action is that anything else, if the agent wants to do some insert, delete, or update, that's the agent action. Okay. So what are the actions and what are the effects on the environment? I changed this slide from the one I had last, I changed this particular slide because I decided not to go into any language at least today. Because we're going to discuss what would be a good language, so stay close to English. So it says if you insert F, then that will make F true. If you insert a fact to the database, that fact will be true. That's the action of doing insert F, and it will make F true. That is the effect. And you can insert something if it is not already there. If you do delete, then it will make that false. And you can delete something if it is there, only if it is there. And update FF prime, it will make F prime true and F false. And you can update F to F prime if F is already there. Okay, these are very simple. So these are the actions and these are the effects described in somewhat English-like language. Goal. So the goal is, again I'm writing in English, is make sure the stable state of the database satisfies the following. Okay? And so there is a relation between this accounts and credit. So it says for each client C which appear in a tuple A, tuple is kind of a particular fact in the relation account. If the credit is less than 3K, then the status is bad. So we just kind of based on the credit amount, you just assign something, somebody's status is bad or good. And if the credit is greater than 3,000, then the status is good. And second one, it says for each client C which appears in a tuple A in the relation amount, the credit is 5,000 minus the sum of all the purchase amounts plus the sum of all the payment amounts. Okay. So there's the 5,000 credit, so somebody purchases things and payments. So basically you say, okay, 5,000, he purchased 1,000, so the credit is 4,000, but he paid 500, so credit is 4,500. And why am I doing all this? I mean, going back here, so what will happen is when somebody does a payment, just this particular fact is added, right? Now, the data entry operator is not supposed to go and change other things. Because you're not hoping that the data entry operator is going to do the calculation and make go to the account table and change the credit status. That is done by the triggers by the database itself. There's program inside to do it. That's the agent we're talking about. The agent inside the database which tries to make all this consistent. Because we are not expecting the data entry operator to enter, they only enter one particular fact. Okay, they are going to enter the payment or the purchase. And the agent behind, if you think it as an agent, is one which is going to change the account, the credit value and the status to achieve something. Okay. So this is the goal, and this is basically the trigger which will achieve this. And the trigger says when a tuple P is added to the purchase relation, then update the tuple A in the relation account such that, I mean, these are the same, we are talking about the same client, so that the updated credit has the value obtained by subtracting the amount from the credit. It's basically, it's a lot of jargon, it's basically saying if you are adding a purchase, then take that amount from the credit. Because somebody bought it, so it's minus. And when somebody, and the second one says, after you have done this, or whenever there is a, this account is updated such that the credit is less than 3,000, then you go and change the status as bad. And this one says, when somebody makes a payment, then you go and add the increase the credit. So the credit has a value obtained by adding this amount to the old credit. And this one says, okay, if somehow the credit becomes more than 3,000, then update the status such that the value is good. Okay? So now what we saw is we really don't have here observations. So we saw D, we saw goal, and we saw control. Right? And we want to show proof that in this D, I mean this D after C will be true all for all time points. And in time you do this C, after that this D will be true. This D will be true. Because you are, then the C, what is C here? C is this trigger. So suppose the database is in a stable state, and so it's slightly different actually. The correctness formulation is, suppose the database is in a stable state that it satisfies the goal conditions and an allowable exogenous action occurs, then if the triggers are executed, they will take the database to a stable state. Okay. So again, I mean, this is totally not something agent or any agents are not here actually. This is a different domain. I mean, I can say it's the database consistency agent, but the theory of actions change, all the general theory I talked about is applicable here. We just use this to prove the correctness of something called active databases. There's a whole field called active databases. Because regular databases are where you do ask queries and insert and delete. active means there are some triggers which fires after you do insert and delete to make the database consistent. And the point of this was there's the lesson with the agents, you can see goals and the control. At the same time, the theory of action and change is something, if you start looking, you will find everywhere. In computer science, in many, many different fields, you will come across it. So the basic theories that you learned here are going to be very useful in many different places. Okay, so I finished early, so let me go over the book to give you an idea of what we are getting into. So this particular, let me see. This was actually a chapter written out of the book Focus on Agents. So it does not have the general goals that I'm talking about application of action and change to all the other fields. It doesn't have that part. That's in a separate page which I will put. And so this section talks about the various aspects, what word do I call it? Specifying actions under effect. So that's the section 1.1. Then I talk about observations, goals, control architecture, and then this is where the prediction, planning, explanation, diagnosis, all those things come into picture. Just a quick explanation of different things here. And then we get into the chapter on actions and the environment. And this is what we're going to start covering from next class in more detail. And the main focus, I'm not going to teach like this, but I'll make other slides I have. The main focus would be, so far we are doing in English, what is the language I specify, means how exactly I specify the effect of an action, what is the language I use. And once I define that and I write some sentences, how do I go from that to the meaning? How do I go from the sentences to this transition diagram? Okay. And what makes it difficult is when we start talking about there are two issues that make things difficult. So there is the issue which is called the frame problem. The frame problem is saying that when I'm describing actions, what should I describe? Should I just describe things that change? That this action will change this thing? Because there are many things, any action you pick, okay? It changes certain things, but it leaves it unchanged millions of other things. Because every action is local in some sense. So if we are thinking about the size, we better focus on the small change that it makes and somehow derive or come up with all the other changes that don't happen. Capture that aspect. And that itself is not so hard. What makes it harder is the example I gave you about if I'm at X, I'm not at Y, if Y is something different. So when we start taking into account the interlinking in the world, taking that into account makes things difficult. And we'll see. And it's very that's very interesting is an example I have here. So the constraint or the property of the world is that a person cannot be at two places at the same time. Right? That's a constraint. That's the property of the world. And because of this property, if I say that going from A to B, I will be at B, I can refer to this property and derive that I will not be at A because I cannot be at two places at the same time, right? Make sense? So I can derive it, and we'll show the mechanism how to derive it. But let's now take the slightly different example that I use. Also means in the United States, it's illegal to marry two persons, right? So you cannot be married to A and B at the same time. So it's the same predicate. Same style. You can say, I cannot be at two places at the same time. I cannot be married to two people at the same time. Now, suppose you are married to A, and you do accidentally marry to B. What happens? Or what should happen? I mean, it should not be like, it's not like go from A to B, right? It's not like you get married to B and you automatically are divorced from A. It's not like that, right? It's just, if you go to the court hopefully is connected and tell you that you can do that. So the point is that we have the same knowledge if we think of that you cannot be married to the same people, that you cannot be married to two persons at the same time, and you cannot be at two places at the same time. I mean, so the computer, at and marry, doesn't have any meaning. I mean, these are just predicate names, right? At and marry. Now, for these two exactly similar situations, the result is different. So something is missing. So the language of so what is missing is the language of expressing constraints is not quite the right language. Saying that it's not enough to say that one person cannot be married to two people and one person cannot be at two places at the same time. If I just say it that way and put it in logic, that language, the standard logical language to express that, is not powerful enough to distinguish between how to deal with them differently. Because the classical logic will write it the same way as I wrote before. And it's not enough to distinguish between them. So these are all some interesting issues that come up when you try to describe the world and from that get the semantics out of it, get the models out of it. So it will take us a few classes to nail that down. Okay, so I think we are... one thing, I mean, often when you take these classes, when you have so many classes and you take this as without registration or commitment, then people come, don't come, so either you come or you stop coming, then you don't come, don't make it like random.
Okay.
If you feel like, okay, I cannot go anymore, don't come, that's fine. But don't come like, oh, once a 3 days will come, sometimes not come. Then it doesn't, you won't understand things and it won't make sense. So that is where it depends on what kind of observations it is. So for a particular kind of observations, you can add and it will be the same thing. And that's why I kind of distinguish between this B and different kind of observations. So certain kind of observations will change the thing.
event OA itself the minimal number of observations.
We'll see examples where it makes sense to do that and where it doesn't make sense to do that.